जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी, गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी, गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी, राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, यशोदानंदन ब्रज जनरंजन, 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 यमुना तीर वनचारी, यमुना तीर वनचारी, जय जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari Yashoda Nandana Praja Jana Ranjana 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 Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jai Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari 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 Gaura Premanande Hari Hari Bol Jayam Vishnupat Paramahamsa Pravijagacharja Ashtottara Shata Shri Srimad Srila Vaishnavaran Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai Nama Acharja Srila Thakura Haridas Ki Jai Prem Sekho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Garadhar Shivasari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shyam Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Nadi Mayapur Dham Ki Jai Ganga Devi Ki Jai Yamuna Mayi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Tulsi Rani Ki Jai Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Shri Hari Nama Sankirtana Ki Jai Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Iskan Bibiti Samsthapak Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Gau Premanande All glory Sri Samal Devotees All glory Sri Samal Devotees All glory Sri Samal Devotees All glory to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga Jai Srila Prabhupada Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Narayanam namaskritya Naram chaiva narottamam Devim sarasvatim vyasam Tato jayamudirayet Nashta praeshu abhadreshu Nityam bhagavata sevaya Bhagavati uttama shloke Bhaktir bhavati naishtiki Krishne swadhamo pagate Dhanamagnanaripisaha Kalau nashtadrisham esha Purana arko dhanodita. That means that just after the departure of Lord Krishna to his own abode, the Srimad Bhagavatam has arisen, just like the sun, to provide light to all of us in the Kali Yuga who have lost our vision otherwise. Srimad Bhagavatam is spotless Purana. So today we're on Canto 11, Chapter 15, Text number 13. Dharayan Mayi Aham Tatve Mana Vaikarike Akhilam Sarvendriyanam. It doesn't look like an S because it's not an S, but it should be an S. Sarvendriyanam. Yeah, it's not complete there. Atmatvam praptim prapnoti manmanaha dharayan mayaham tatve manovaikarike khilam saravendriyanam atmatvam praptim prapnoti manmanaha dharayan mayaham tatve manovaikarike khilam sarvendriyanam atmatvam praptim prapnoti manmanaha dharayan mayaham tatve manovaikarike khilam sarvendriyanam atmatvam praptim prapnoti manmanaha sarvendriyanam atmatvam prapnoti manmanaha dharayan. Concentrating. Maye in me. Aham tatve. Within the element of false ego. Manamaha. The mind. Vaikarike. In that which is produced from the mode of goodness. Akhilam. Completely. Sarva. Of all living entities, indriyanam, of the senses, atmatvam, proprietorship, praptim, the mystic perfection of acquisition, prapnoti, obtains, manmanaha, the yogi whose mind is fixed on me. Translation. Fixing his mind completely in me, within the element of false ego, generated from the mode of goodness, the yogi obtains the power of mystic acquisition, by which he becomes the proprietor of the senses of all living entities. He obtains such perfection because his mind is absorbed in me. Please repeat. Fixing his mind completely in me, within the element of false ego, generated from the mode of goodness. The yogi obtains the power of mystic acquisition, by which he becomes the proprietor of the senses of all living entities. He obtains such perfection because his mind is absorbed in me. Purport. It is significant that in order to acquire each mystic perfection, one must fix one's mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur states that those who pursue such perfections without fixing the mind in the Supreme Lord acquire a gross and inferior reflection of each mystic potency. Those who are not conscious of the Lord cannot actually synchronize their minds perfectly with the universal functions, and therefore cannot elevate their mystic opulences to the universal platform. Om Jnana Timinantasya Jnananjana Shilakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guruho Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Dharayan mai aham tatve manovaikarike akhilam sarvendriyanam atmatvam praptim prapnoti manmanaha. Fixing his mind completely in me, within the element of false ego generated from the mode of goodness, the yogi obtains the power of mystic acquisition, by which he becomes the proprietor of the senses of all living entities. He obtains such perfection because his mind is absorbed in me. We're continuing our discussion of the mystic yoga perfections. Anybody really hankering after this particular mystic yoga perfection?
We need more instruction. Sounds good to me.
So what does all this mean? What does it mean, actually? It sounds pretty complicated stuff, pretty subtle. Okay, so we don't necessarily want prapti siddhi, but actually we do. This is the point. We really do want these things. We don't realize that we want these things, but we want these things, all 18 of them. There are 18 of them mentioned in this chapter. 8 main perfections and 10 sub-perfections. Actually, I was looking through the list, and the sub-perfections, they seem to be more attractive than the main perfections. Anyway, why do we work hard? Why do we want money? Why do we seek after prestige? Why do we want, cars, women, houses, money, whatever it is that we're looking for in this material world? It's some sort of manifestation of one or another of these perfections. If you have more money, what can you do with that money? What's money good for? What do you do with money? You get things. That is called prapti siddhi, to get something. So we want these things, actually. If we don't want these things, it's only because we're thoroughly ignorant of them. This is the point. We say that pure devotional service is free of karma and jnana. We can't hope, really, to free ourselves from desires for karma and jnana until we really understand what the scope of karma and jnana are, or what the scope is. So, therefore, Bhagavatam goes into great detail to explain just what exactly is the significance of these things. And it says here, just like yesterday, you can become lighter than the lightest, isn't it? Yeah, Lakhima. And today we're talking about you can get anything from any place. So there's always a few ways to do things in this material world, and in particular with the mystic perfections, they're acquired really by some sort of indirect mode of devotional service. But let's not go there just yet. Let's first talk about how do we get the things that we want. We're talking about prapti siddhi today. Prapti means to get something, acquisition, as Prabhupada wrote here, or as the translator wrote here. So how do we get what we want? Generally money, right? Or we find some other way to do it. And God has nothing to do with it. Sacrifice has nothing to do with it. Discipline only has something to do with it in as much as it's impossible to get money or whatever else our agent is, except through some hard work. This is why we work in this world. So we actually do want these things. Just like Prabhupada says throughout his books, what is the last snare of Maya? Anybody remember? The last snare of Maya. To think that you're God. Now, what does that perfection come from? It's the ultimate in self-realization, because we are God, in a sense, in a limited sense. We're nothing but God, in that we're made of nothing but God. So, those who are attracted to jnana, they find the ultimate perfection of their jnana in self-realization. Just like this nuclear physicist we were talking the other day, George Wald, anybody remember him? We're not rocket scientists here. Anyway, he was a Nobel laureate, nuclear physicist, very famous, very well-known man, Einstein class, very brilliant. So when they get that high in their field, whatever it is, actually any field of study in the material world ultimately leads to physics, because that's the highest science that we have in the mundane realm. And among the physicists, sometimes we see that when they attain the maturity, in the maturity of their years, and in the maturity of their careers, and in the maturity of their acquisition, if you will, of jnana, then they figure out that, wait a minute, there's got to be something more to it than this. It's a box that science imposes on itself that you can't really move anywhere beyond a certain point. So they begin to inquire about God. And George Wald was one of these people. Dharashaya, you were in Austin, no? In the rest? So you remember him? He used to come to the temple. He was doing George Wald, nuclear physicist, Nobel laureate, scientist. That wasn't before you, okay. Anyway, so He eventually started looking into Vedic philosophy. He was very interested in Hinduism, Vedanta in particular. And at a certain point, he started chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. He died, I think, really before he could fully adopt to Krishna consciousness. But he got prasadam many times, and he introduced his colleagues also to the process of chanting, because he figured out that there, you know, you can't really understand what makes everything tick unless you're ready to step outside the box of what we call mundane science. Practically speaking, even mundane logic, you've got to step outside of that as well. This is an important point that we'll try to return to in regards to this verse. So that's Gyan. The Gyanis, they ultimately come to some point of self-realization. And what is the perfection of self-realization? Because we're only a small part and parcel of God, to realize the self isn't quite enough. When you want more self-realization, then you have to have God-realization. So the Gyanis, when they're perfect Gyanis, they merge into this consciousness that of their qualitative oneness. And when they do that, they sometimes make the mistake that I've become God now, because they don't realize that there's actually quantitative difference. They're qualitatively non-different, but they're not quantitatively non-different. So this is a very, very attractive thing, actually. The happiness of Brahmananda, it's stated in the Shastras, it makes the happiness of mundane gross sense gratification, or even subtle sense gratification in this world, it makes it seem paltry by comparison. So Gyanis, they can actually give up gross sense gratification in many cases, when they're really, really absorbed, when they're really Brahmabhuta. So we're not talking about that, but this is to illustrate the point that actually karma and jnana are very attractive to us. We're not chasing after anything else, in fact, in any of our endeavors. And once we see that, once we see how that's true, then we get a sense of the magnitude of Krishna consciousness and really what a great endeavor it is to actually overcome these things. So in this verse, we're kind of halfway between the karmis and the jnanis, because yoga is a third thing that kind of straddles both. And here we're talking about the tangible fringe benefits of yoga, called the mystic siddhis. You can do more than just wow your friends with this sort of thing. You can actually get anything you want. You can, as we said yesterday, you can become lighter than the lightest. what did we say before that? We have mahima, you can become greater than the greatest. We'll discuss a few others. We're probably going to get bored with all this after some time, because it's all the same stuff, just different varieties of maya. So we want to enjoy gross sense gratification when we're animals, and most people are animals, in fact. Why do I say that so boldly? Because dharmasya hina pashubhisamana, a human, biologically correct human being, who doesn't really have any sense of dharma, he's just an animal, Hitopadesha says. And many, many places in our shastras we hear this thing. So human life begins when we at least have some concept of dharma. Dharma means execute some austerities, do some sacrifice, give in charity, control your senses, be religious, be theistic, these kinds of things. This is what it really means just to be a bona fide human being. So we're not even at that level yet, most of us who are socialized in the modern world, because in the modern world you don't care about any of these things. We're completely in ignorance. And if you can get money by killing someone, enough people in the world are doing that, including governments like ours. How do we keep the price of gas down? By killing people. Taking away their assets. We were discussing this the other day. Private security firms have replaced national armies, because they work on behalf of corporations, and corporations aren't fettered by such pesky things as constitutions or even human rights or ethics or anything that subtle. So, you know, if you've got people who have been on their ancestral lands for perhaps 1,000 years, as is the case, even near Vrindavan where I live, the government, we call it eminent domain in America. It's the same thing. The corporations bribe some government official and get official sanction to just push people off their land and build a shiny glass and steel corporate headquarters in Gurgaon near Delhi, even though there's no infrastructure, including even paved roads to get there. And nobody's taking out the trash because there's no city incorporated yet. You see? Wild, passionate, sinful development. Mindless development. So this is called Vikarnama. This is what animals do. You ever approach a dog when he's eating? This is the idea. So when people are this gross, they don't know anything about what to speak of mystic yoga. They don't even know anything about a dharmic, civilized, stable human form of life. They only know, is he a threat or is he not a threat? That's called security in modern parlance. We call it defense. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Nowadays, security. Asset protection. These are all different modes of the fighting propensity, the defense propensity. So when we're gross, this is our concern, and we don't care for any future because many of us don't even believe in any future. When we get so covered over by sense gratification, we go so crazy with desire. One poet said, sick with desire, chained to a dying animal, he knows not what he is. This is what we call the human condition in the modern concept. We've already discussed what the Shastric concept of humanity is. But when people talk about being human, it basically means having flaws. Because they can't imagine anything beyond that. So, people are sometimes, they just push and they kill and if you're really the pushiest person, this is how you get success in the material world, without any concern for a future life, because they're not even sure if they're spiritual or not, many people. They think that we are this body. Actually, people really do think that, as amazing as it is. Anyway, as we've said, when we become a little more subtle and sensitive to the laws of nature and how they work, then we see the importance of dharma, and we try to take to that. But even above that, is more subtle than that, I should say, rather, is this dharma is called karma also. When we talk about karma and gyan, strictly speaking, karma means dharma. Because anything that's not dharma, any activity that isn't dharma, what do we call it instead of karma? We call it vikarnama or papa. So karma means punya. Anything, any other activity in the material world means papa or vikarma. And those things bind us. Generally, they take us down. Then we become animals because we forfeited the potential of the human form of life. We've wasted time. And when it's too late, generally people figure out that there's nothing here in this world, and then they can't do anything about it because they're dying. You get a tap on the shoulder at the time of death, and one of Yamaraja's agents says, excuse me, sir, we need to discuss your account. Come with me, please. So, this is perverted human form of life. Real human life begins with dharma. And when we become a little more subtle in that realm, then we begin to get an inkling of what is the significance of all these mystic perfections. Because here's a way, with Shastric sanction, that you can actually get really special things. Pretty much like they're trying to do through sinful activity nowadays. My mother told me that ever since she was a kid, they were trying to tweak the magnetic influence of the poles of the earth, because we know from physics that there are strong magnetic waves there. And those magnetic waves have geo significance. They influence weather patterns, and they do so many things like this. So big scientists are trying to do all this without God, without, that means basically, practically speaking, without sacrifice, without charity, without austerity, without dharma. And the result is that they screw things up such that everybody suffers, including themselves, and mainly their children, the coming generations. Global warming is one example of that. We have so many others. We were talking about this Chinese rice now, that they're sending plastic rice. In India, actually, it's so, they've become so, their concern with dharma has become so lightweight that now they inject all sorts of, God only knows what kind of chemicals into, say, watermelons to make them look crispy and red. We've been doing this in the United States for a long time. But there's some sort of oversight. In India, all bets are off. Anything they can put in there. And they don't really care what it is also. Just like when you buy milk, the cheating propensity. This is one of the most prominent aspects of Indian society nowadays, the cheating propensity. And, you know, you when you move to Vrindavan, you may find a good dudhwala, this milk seller. And he's giving you good milk, and it seems like a decent price, so you go for it. But then gradually, you start noticing the milk is starting to get a little funny, and the price is going up. Because it's not just milk in there. They put anything in there that makes it thick and rich, anything that makes it taste good, regardless of what, you know, parabens, anything goes. So, you know, and there's absolutely no accountability in India because even though there is a legal system, it's thoroughly dysfunctional and may take you 30 years to actually get your court case heard, what to speak of resolved. And that's not counting all the people who are taking bribes along the way. So these are all the symptoms of Kali Yuga. But sensitive people realize, intelligent people and people who have become somewhat purified, somewhat raised above this sinful level of existence, animal level of existence, they begin to get an inkling that there's something to be said about sacrifice. There's some real value in austerity. We can really get somewhere by giving charity. Even in this sinful world, we have big people like Bill Gates, and they like to give a lot of charity. They can see this much, because we have some sort of tradition in the West as well, like this. Okay, so that is where yoga becomes, or mystic yoga perfections, I should say, yoga siddhis, becomes very appealing, because we can see the connections, we can connect the dots, as we say. Now this is a very boring section of the 11th canto because we really don't see how everything connects here. But if you get some insight, then you see, oh my God, this really works. I mentioned yesterday or the day before, I actually saw somebody take a Limca bottle and reduce it into a pile of powder, glass powder in his hands, and pour it out in front of an awestruck crowd in Hardwar. And, you know, I guess he was getting maybe donations or something, I don't know. Maybe he was after name and fame, it's hard to say. But actually there is such a thing as mystic power. This is the point. And further than that, we know from Shastra that a pure devotee actually has mystic powers. And why is that? Today's verse tells us why. Because you don't get these mystic powers, in full at least, unless you're actually thinking of God. This is the ultimate sacrifice, and this is the key characteristic of anything that's advocated in the Vedic literature. It's going to make you do some sacrifice, it's going to make you do some charity, some austerity, or lead you to God. These are the things. These are the common denominators that we see in all the various karma and jnana and yoga and other processes, hundreds of them that we find scattered throughout the Vedic literatures. They always lead upward. Urdhvam gacchati sattvastha. Those who are in the mode of goodness, they go up. And Krishna defines what is the activity of somebody in the mode of goodness. Deva dvija guru prajna pujanam. They worship. They worship not only God, but they worship even the parents. They worship the seniors. They worship the Brahmins. They worship gurus, acharyas, etc. So we can gain a lot from this consciousness. And finally, I'm going to just say a few things that we hear from Sridhar Swami in his commentary here about what some of these words here mean. First of all, look at the last word of the verse. What is it? Manmana. Manmana. Does that sound familiar? Anybody heard this? Everybody knows this phrase. Manmana. What does it refer to? Where's Bhagavad Gita? What does it say? Krishna says? Manmana bhavamad bhakto. Twice he says the same thing in Bhagavad Gita, in chapter 9 and again in chapter 18. Because this is the essence of it. Bhajo hure man. In the beginning, let me fix my mind on the lotus feet of whom? Nandanandan, the son of Nanda Maharaj, Krishna. In other words, become a devotee. Prabhupada often stresses these four things that Krishna says. Manmana is the first one. Fix your mind. Bhavamad bhakta, become my devotee. Madhyaji, that means worship me. Mam namaskuru, and bow down to me. So this is the point. Somehow or other, you have to become Krishna conscious. And this is Vyasadeva's logic in all these different recommendations that are given in the Vedas. Somehow or other, the mind should be fixed on Krishna. Somehow or other, yena kena prakarena mana Krishna navesha yet. So, that we see is going on here. And Sridhar Swami is pointing out for us here. And also all the acharyas, actually, including the purport mentions Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, makes the same point. It comes beginning with Sridhar Swami, and everyone repeats the same thing. So the idea is that your mind has to be fixed on Krishna. Sridhar Swami draws our attention to two other verses in this chapter, text number 21 and 22. And he points out, he reminds us that we should consider what do they say there. The phrase is used here, madharananubhavena. That means the yogi who completely absorbs his mind in me. Tatratma yatra vayimanaha. That person gets perfection. And in text 22, he also mentions mad yoga balam ashrayaha. By taking shelter of the power of yoga, the real power of yoga. What is the power of yoga? What is the strength of yoga? Bala means strength. What is it? In his Yoga Sutras, Patanjali makes a very interesting conclusion. He gives a long list of all the things that you can do to attain perfection in yoga. Since we're talking about mystic perfections, it's appropriate to quote the authority on mystic yoga, Patanjali. So he says in one sutra, finally, after concluding this big long list, he says, Ishvara pranidhanad ba, or you can just fix your mind on God. So you can do all these things. You can tie yourself in a pretzel. You can stand in your head. You can crush Coke bottles. You can travel to other planets, through rivers, and so many things that yogis do. Or you can just fix your mind on Krishna. So he's also admitting, even while he's prescribing so many other methods, he's actually admitting or hinting for us what the real issue is here. What we say in Hindi, bat, yehi bat hai. This is the real thing. A person has to somehow fix his mind on God. We already stated. Yena kena prakarena mana Krishna navesha yet. So that's one thing. And Sridhar Swami has drawn our attention to these other verses in this chapter to show giving evidences that Krishna is also hinting the same thing here and throughout this chapter. Just your mind has to be fixed on me, otherwise it's not going to work. Therefore, it's significant that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, if you try these things without fixing your mind on the Supreme, then you get a gross inferior reflection of the same mystic power. You don't get the full mystic power. Now, there's some very interesting things about this verse. He says here, you can become the proprietor of all the senses of all living beings in the universe. That sounds pretty attractive to somebody like, you know, I mean, what else are we trying to do, right? You just have them all come into your shop because you're controlling their senses? There's actually a drug like this you can get in, I think, maybe in Colombia, where so many narcotics trade and so many cartels are there. They actually have this drug. They somehow administer this drug, and it's not perceptible to the person that it's administered to. You just wipe his face or something like they did with this Korean guy a few months ago. So you can actually really mess somebody up because he doesn't realize that he's messed up. Once I had a colonoscopy of all gross subjects, and they put me under anesthesia. This was in the University of Washington. When you go for medical treatment in the university, they can do anything to you because they're experimenting. So they gave me this drug, and I was completely conscious throughout the whole procedure, but I didn't feel any pain. And then I woke up about, you know, 15 minutes after they'd finished, even though I was completely conscious the whole time. How do you explain that? And I didn't remember anything. I was watching the whole thing. I was marveling over the whole process, seeing them, like, explore through my guts on the screen that they had. And then somehow or other something snapped, and I just forgot everything. So such things exist. I forget what they call that drug. But the criminals also use it, because then you just take someone by the hand and you lead him to his ATM and you empty it out and you do whatever you want with him or her. So how did I get on this topic? That I suppose that's another sinful way of prapti siddhi. You see, but you have to pay for that. Either way you pay. You can pay up front and be elevated, or you can pay later and be degraded. This is the option. But if you want to enjoy in this material world, these are the only two choices. Or Ishvara Pranidhanadva, you can just instead fix your mind on Krishna and go back to Godhead, and Krishna will give you everything you want. Which he does. He's quite happy to do that. So, yeah, we were talking about becoming the proprietor of the senses of all living entities. How in the world does that transpire? Fixing his mind completely in me, within the element of false ego generated from the mode of goodness. Just that phrase alone is pretty hard to wrap your head around, isn't it? False ego is generated from the mode of goodness. And then you fix your mind completely on Krishna within that element somehow. That means you have to have some sort of conception of what that element is. You've got to be pretty advanced to follow this process to begin with. Sridhar Swami's commentary helps us here. He says, there's a few words here that we can think about or we can ask about. Vaikarike, that's an interesting word, not easily recognizable. Vaikarika usually means transformational. It deals with vikara. Vikara means transformation. So vaikarika means something that transforms or something that's transformational. Vaikarika, what is the meaning? He says, ahankara upadhi. That thing which is designated as false ego, ahankara. What does ahamkara mean? Literally, aham means I. Kara means automobile, car. This is Prahladananda Swami's etymology. Ahankar, I am the car. I think I'm my BMW or my Porsche. But actually, ahamkara means the I maker, the thing that makes your sense of I. That is ahamkara. Okay? This is considered to be transformed from the mode of goodness, mayi, in me. That means, and then he says, akilam. Here the word akila is used also. Prabhupada says means completely. Here he says, ekagra, one-pointed. We don't even have one-pointed attention. We're so splayed out and so spent with so much sense gratification, we can't even gather enough focus, as we described the other day, to really do anything powerful. Because it's Kali Yuga. Nobody has any discipline. Nobody has any focus. But if you do, this is the meaning of the word akila. You can focus on this process of fixing your mind within the element of false ego. And then what happens? Sarvendriyanam atmatvam. You become the atma of everyone's senses. Now what in the world does that mean? To become the soul of everyone's senses, or to become the self of everyone's senses. Where would we be without Sridhar Swami? He says, atmatvam adhishtatritvam. Atmatvam means the state of being the atma. Just like sattvam means the state of being, generally. Tva is a suffix. In English, we have the same suffix. N-E-S-S. Goodness, happiness, you know, this-ness, that-ness. That's what tva means in Sanskrit. So, adhishtatritvam. It means to be identified as the controlling deity of someone's senses. We know that our senses are all controlled, if not by us, then by some presiding deity that rules over the senses. For example, eyesight, your sense of vision. Which deity controls the eyesight? Anybody know offhand? This isn't in the Bhagavatam. The sun. That's correct, the sun. Without the sun, nobody sees anything. Similarly, our hearing is controlled by one particular demigod. Our digestion is controlled by another demigod. There's so many Agni, isn't it?
What does that mean, controlled?
They oversee the functioning of your senses because they're in control of universal elements and universal energies. And our body is a microcosm of the macrocosm. Our body is a small representative sample of the entire universe, in the same way that a drop of water is the same as the ocean of water, constituently. So, with all, you know, since they've got their hands on all those elements out there, therefore they've got their hands on our bodies as well, inside and outside. And the body is functioning, not because you're so great, but because they're making it work. And they're just following the dictations of Govinda, through whose agent they get the report, this is such a person's prarabdha karma, you've got to give him this and that at this and that time. Everything is worked out.
It just seems like such a huge service.
It is. Therefore, the most qualified people only can do this. Not just anybody can do these things. You have to, what is the qualification for being Lord Brahma? You have to have perfectly executed Varnashram Dharma for at least 100 births. Then you can become without any flaw. Remember, we're talking akhilam. What did Prabhupada say about the word akhilam here? Ekagra. I'm sorry, Sridhar Swami said ekagra. Fixed focus. Really into it and do it well. Then you become Brahma. It's not an easy thing to do this. It's not an easy thing. We really have no hope in these affairs. We really don't. We have no adhikar whatsoever. We can't even imagine these affairs until somebody explains them to us, just like Sridhar Swami has done. So atmatvam adhishtatritvam means you identify with the presiding deity of that sense. If you identify in that way through the agency of false ego, then you get the agency of that deity. You can control it. Because the system is such. You're allowed to do that. It's bona fide. It's not that you're taking away some demigod's position, but you're being benedicted. Okay, he did this yoga process. Let him have this. You see? That's how it works. All right, so Atra hetu. Now, what is the reason for all this? Why are you benedicted like this? Manmana. Because your mind is fixed on God. You see? Okay. He did the discipline. He did the yoga. That means he put his mind on God at least to that extent. So give it to him what he wants. You see? Sorry? Yeah, Hiranyakashipu followed the same process. Saying anybody. It's a mundane process. It doesn't matter if your motive is infected as anything, as his was. It's a mechanical process. But it involves some degree of austerity and sacrifice and charity. Therefore, it purifies one to some degree. But if your motives are completely horrible like his, you know, what's the real payoff? It doesn't really work. Therefore, atrahetu, the reason behind this all is manmana. Just fix your mind on Krishna. Here, if you look, those who know Sanskrit, if you look at the verse, you'll not be able to find the subject of this verse because there's only one subject here, and that's manmana. So what does manmana mean? It means the devotee who has fixed his mind on Krishna. Manmana bhava, madbhakta. Okay. Mayi mano dharana prabhavad evam bhavati. Natrativa hetur asanteya iti bhava. The idea here is that this thing cannot be very well attained unless your mind has become fixed on Krishna, because when your mind is fixed on Krishna, you get innate power. It's true. That's why we say that the devotees, they have all these mystic powers also. If your mind is fixed to that degree, then you get that degree of power also. Even the devotees, they don't want these mystic perfections, but Krishna gives it to them. So, then he, as I said before, we've already mentioned. Now, Jiva Goswami adds one comment, vaikarika, on the word vaikarika. We've already described. What does vaikarika mean? Transformational. Jiva Goswami says, vaikarike shuddha sattva maye. He says, this transformation in the mode of goodness is shuddha sattva, not ordinary sattva guna, but it's shuddha sattva guna. Because of the primacy of the bhakti principle here. We're talking about a devotee, and we're talking about the perfection that he achieves because of his devotion. Therefore, Jiva Goswami says it's shuddha sattva. All right. So, what else does it say here in the purport? A nice sentence here. Those who are not conscious of the Lord cannot actually synchronize their minds perfectly with the universal functions and therefore cannot elevate their mystic opulences to the universal platform. This reminds me of a statement that one of my godbrothers made. He's an astrologer, and he said, it's a science, but it's not just mundane science. It's divination. You're acting as a diviner. And he says the bhakti principle is built into the system. You have to approach God and pray for the ability to perform your function as an astrologer. And actually the fact is that we have to do this with everything that we do, because that's the reality. Krishna is the real doer. He's the real potent Purusha. And we're just small, small parts and parcels struggling along. What does he use the word in Bhagavad Gita? Karshati, struggling with our six senses and minds, trying to deal with material existence. So if we want to elevate ourselves, certainly we have to take shelter of Krishna. And if we do that, ekagram, akhilam, completely, then we will actually come so much in touch with Krishna. And Krishna is the Lord of the Lords of the material elements, or the senses. We talked about our senses. Our senses are controlled by adhishtatris, that means presiding demigods who make them work. Those demigods themselves are empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's just a step removed. The real process is to surrender to Krishna. No matter what you're looking at in the Vedic literature, it always leads to that point. So might as well take the direct path, which has been made so easy for us in the Kali Yuga by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All we have to do is fix our mind with one-pointed attention, akhilam, ekagram, on this Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And that will affect such a change in our consciousness that we will also be able to fix our minds 100% on the process of helping others to adopt the same practice. So this brings to mind a verse by Bilva Mangala Thakur. He says, only when your mind is fixed on Krishna can you give stern thought to philosophy, because we have to use our brains also. Sensitive thought to literature, because the emotional component is there. It's important. Feelings matter. And ceaseless thought to our duty, because you have to do something. You see? So if you want to give appropriate thought to philosophy, sensitive thought to literature, and ceaseless thought to your duties, you have to first fix your mind on Krishna constantly. Nirantaratiya, he says. Okay, I'm going to stop here, but if anybody has any questions or any comments, we can discuss further. No. Oh, Nandini.
What a wonderful class, Prabhu. So nice to have your association. Just ecstatic. This is just a little bit of a question, if you will, on the on the fact of the milk, the quality of milk you got from Wallahs in India, and how it becomes, who knows what they put into
gradually, it. Gradually they start cheating right. While they're raising the price.
Exactly.
And it's everywhere like that. Gopi yes. Pranadana told me the only way you can get good milk in India is to keep your own cow.
Cow, yes, and then you know.
Right? And that's exactly what Prabhupada told us to do.
Yeah.
Because nowadays it's getting even worse than that. You don't even get real vegetables anymore.
Yeah.
They're stuffed with so many things, and they're all irradiated, and they're GMOs,
and who knows
cancerous,
what.
Who knows what they do.
Yes. So I guess my question in that regard is, so when I was serving in restaurant Seva in Denver, I was cooking with in the evening with a devotee, Rohini. She's been serving there many years, and she's, you know, a vegan. We had a vegan cafe simply because she did. She sent me an entire report about the commercial milk in the U.S. And basically, these animals are fed. These cows in their feed are getting meat products. Mm. So commercial milk, the report was very detailed. Commercial milk is contaminated with animals in their feed, in factory farms that are fed animals in their feed. But organic milk, it does not. So there's a big distinction. So I guess my question in that regard is, how does that work in our temple kitchens when we are for the deities and for the restaurants around the using commercial milk? Because I've heard the fact that in that regard, if it's offered to Krishna, then it is Krishna takes the karma for that. Vridayananda Maharaj, in a very lengthy article, just smashes that theory completely. And I just wondered what your thoughts were on that.
Well, this opens up a big arena of topics.
Box. Yeah,
and they're important topics, and they're topics that Prabhupada wanted us to take seriously also. Mm-hmm. But I'll try to be brief. The first thing is, we separate life into different categories. And, you know, one such category is religion, and another such category is policy, and another such category is, you know, social acceptability, and all these kinds of things. And we we create an artificial world in which we blot out reality by these constructs that we've erected. So is this a philosophical, are we looking for a philosophical conclusion, or are we looking for a policy conclusion? You see, they actually go together. But sometimes I've actually had devotees, long senior devotees, highly respected devotees, tell me, "Well, that's philosophy. Why don't you just, you know, let's talk about reality," okay, as if there's a difference between the two. Anyway, that's one thing. The second thing is that, you know, Dr. Day in Houston, he's a toxicologist. You may know him anyway. He told me many years ago, this is at least 20 years ago, he told me, every aquifer in the North America is contaminated now with arsenic and, you know, cadmium, mercury, you know, agricultural runoff, industrial runoff. The aquifers themselves are, you know, contaminated. So when we want to talk about simple living and high thinking, or living a pure natural life, as this is the rubric, then we have to understand that it's really hardly possible, actually, in today's world. Now, don't get concerned about where I seem to be going, because I'm not going there. But therefore, the conclusion is, making use of the philosophy, that, well, everything's contaminated anyway, just do Sankirtana and everything becomes purified and everything will be all right. And there's truth in that, but we see practically that devotees get cancer, we see that devotees fall down, we see that devotees even do criminal things because of the heavy influence of this material world upon them. I think Srila Prabhupada saw this. He said so. There's a very interesting conversation between himself and, I think, Hari Shori and Satsarup Maharaj and maybe a couple of others in Mayapur on Valentine's Day in 1977. And you can, if you listen to that conversation, you can actually appreciate that Prabhupada's senior disciples, the leaders of his movement, are actually arguing with him. They don't accept what he's telling them, and they're using his own philosophy to do it. So Srila Prabhupada saw that his disciples were having problems maintaining. In 1977, Srila Prabhupada gave what I see as his two final instructions. The more famous of them is that you should all cooperatively maintain this society in my absence. At the time, we all wondered, well, wait a minute. Why does he just want us to sustain this thing? Why, you know, we're supposed to expand, right? Nobody could imagine how difficult it would be to sustain things. And some people to this day refuse to acknowledge that we have not sustained many things. That's another matter. But in addition to that instruction, Srila Prabhupada gave another instruction. He said that the final remaining 50% of his mission, a pretty strong statement, was the implementation of Varnashram Dharma within ISKCON. Sureshwar Prabhu, my godbrother, told me that when he and Hare Krishna Dasi first compiled this book of quotes about that topic from Prabhupada, they went into the project with the assumption that, you know, we're going to get all these quotes and Varnashram is something that we can teach to people who can't quite take to Krishna consciousness fully, but, you know, they can at least come to the mode of goodness. He said, what he told me is that they realized pretty quickly after compiling all these quotes that these quotes are mostly directed squarely at the initiated membership of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So it's something that Prabhupada intended by and for ISKCON. Now, the point that I'm getting at with that is that Prabhupada gave us solutions to all these kinds of practical, you know, policy problems, health problems, economic problems, social problems, emotional problems, spiritual problems, all the kinds of problems that we have because of being in the material world, and especially because of being intimately in contact with the material world. Prabhupada gave us guidance about how to deal with that. He gave the instructions, but either we didn't understand them, or we didn't implement them, or we just didn't want to do it. And I think that that remains the case even 40 years later. To a large degree, there is a lot of resentment of this principle. Why? Here's one reason, among many. It's difficult, very difficult, especially for managers. And you can see, frankly, if you're open about this, you can see that most of the resistance is coming from managers. But on top of that, we're all socialized in this pseudo-egalitarian ideology that dominates Western thinking, in which everybody's all equal and, you know, anybody can do anything they want. And, you know, you intimately enmeshed, I should say, you know, inextricable from the Varnashram social system is the ideology that goes along with it. And that ideology entails a stratified society. And that strikes at the heart of one of the cardinal principles of Western democracy, which is an egalitarianism. Everybody's equal. We don't like this also. So we've got ideological opposition, we've got practical opposition to Varnashram Dharma. But the instructions are very there, and they're comprehensive. This is the point that we have to take note of. The Dharma Shastras are the most voluminous body of knowledge that exists in writing in Sanskrit language. And the reason they're so voluminous is because the Dharma Shastra tries to take these abstract principles of Vedic philosophy, Krishna consciousness, and translate them into, ground level, pragmatic, you know, social reality. And, you know, this is an endeavor that has gone on for thousands of years. It transcends geopolitical borders. It transcends ages. It's a cohesive entity that we can understand if we want to. But it's not very easy to apply in a specific time, place, and circumstance, because it requires the insight of a pure devotee to do that. In 1977, we had that. And we may have it now, but nobody can agree on who the person is who is going to call the call the shots, so to speak, or set the policies. So we've got a number of things working against it. But actually, what I mean to say is that one of the reasons that the Dharma Shastras are so big is because they address every conceivable human need in every conceivable human situation at every waking moment of the day. Everything from how to change a bandage to, you know, how to get married and, you know, everything. So the instructions are there, but, you know, it's a massive, massive undertaking. One famous scholar, P.V. Kane, he compiled what is to date probably still the most respected reference on this topic, History of Dharma Shastra. That is five huge volumes long, you know, almost like Srimad Bhagavatam. So, you know, to really get a sense of how to do this, one has to consider this entire tradition. I don't know if I'm answering your question completely or not, but milk is part of this because, you know, what you eat, basically, in a nutshell, dharma means how to purify your eating, sleeping, mating, and defending.
I guess, you know, I don't want to go on and on and on, but in Denver, because this report, I sent it to all the management and everything, they have everything, you know, all for whatever, but everything is organic milk, realizing the, trying to purify everything. They make their whatever ghee for the deities out of organic
milk. LA, they're doing that as well.
So it's just it was shocking, the information that was in these. It comes to the fact that many senior initiating gurus, prominent in our society, will not take milk unless it's ahimsa, or ghee unless it's ahimsa. So it's
This is completely consistent with Prabhupada's instructions.
I think so.
But, you know, it's...
Our,
It's a certain kind of mentality that just doesn't like to doesn't like to surrender, you know. It's kind of like when Prabhupada first came out with the fifth canto, there were so many people who just couldn't handle the notion that they didn't go to the moon.
Right.
And they fell down. They left.
Yeah.
And Prabhupada expected that, but he never budged from that position because that's reality.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a little bit like that. It's not so easy to push any kind of spiritual movement in Kali Yuga, but especially when you get really practical like this, specific, time-based, circumstance-based, person-based, then it gets very sensitive because people don't like to be pushed out of their comfort zone. And that's the whole point of it. You're not supposed to be comfortable. It's supposed to be a sacrifice, a charity, an austerity. Otherwise, how do you purify yourself? Yeah, study chapter 16. And chapter 16, the divine and demoniac qualities. It's notable that Krishna spends most of the chapter talking about the demoniac qualities. But in the beginning, one of the first things he says, actually the second thing he says in the list of what the divine qualities are, he lists sattva samshuddhi. That means purification of your existence. And what kind of sattva samshuddhi, what kind of existence is he talking about? It can't be your spiritual existence because spiritually we're already pure. Spirit is never contaminated. So what are we purifying? We're purifying our material existence. And Varnashram is the paradigm for doing that. We may or may not like it, but there's no other Shastra conclusion that can be made. So, you know, part of this, you know, if we just... Actually, Manusmriti gives a very nice rule of thumb. He says, if you just do what your traditional predecessors have done for the ages, all along, then you will never go wrong. But we like to change things, especially in America. I mean, Prabhupada said this is the American disease. He said, if you can stand on your head and walk backwards, do it, but somehow change. So, you know, this is all part of why he said, just cooperatively maintain ISKCON in 1977, because this word maintenance is very crucial to an understanding of dharma. The word dharma itself means maintenance, actually, because it comes from the verbal root tri, which means to sustain. Everybody's talking about sustainable living, but, you know, there's only one way to do it, and that's according to the law book. You want to use your piece of equipment nicely, you have to refer to the user manual, period. So those are the Vedas. And, you know, people have, mainly for sense gratification, given these things up over many, many centuries. It's not a fast process. It's been going on for quite some time. And it's natural in Kali Yuga that we do that. But at least it would seem that Prabhupada really seriously intended for us to be working in that direction. Because it's an offense to chant while neglecting the orders of the spiritual master. Just like it's also an offense against the holy name to reject or neglect or criticize corollary Vedic literatures, such as the Smritis, which teach these things. So it all goes together. This is a long answer to a... As I said, it's a big question, a big arena of questions. I think we should stop now. It's already 9 o'clock.
Thank you very much.
All glories to Srila Prabhupada.